Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Six ten in the morning. Much better start to today for the rest of the world than yesterday. There are developments coming out of Brussels this morning. An arrest was made in the last hour and a half in a suburb of Brussels. Details on the arrest look sketchy so far. Identity of two of the three people in the still photo that was shown yesterday from the airport now popping up all over, and that identity is that they were brothers. Both believed to have died either at the airport or at the airport and at the train station in some combination. The missing piece of this continues to be the missing person, and that's the man in white, not to be confused with somebody doing the right thing. The man in white in the still photo is the one on the far right, in case you saw it. That was alleged to be, and again, a real shortage of explanation on why this is the case. Dave, I don't know how much you caught of this, but here's what we got out of that still photo of three yesterday.
Yeah.
That the two brothers, now identified as brothers, had on one black glove. That was not a tribute to Michael Jackson.
No.
That was believed to be a detonator glove. So now anywhere in the world, if you see somebody with one glove pushing a luggage cart, alert security. Alert security immediately. That should be your get away from them, you know, as far as you possibly can. They could have lost a glove. It could be nothing. But there's
could be
no
Michael
reason.
Jackson impersonator.
It could be a Michael Jackson impersonator, yes, traveling to his Vegas show. But there's no reason not to take direct action if that, in fact, is what we believe to be true. And as of now, 24 hours later, that's what we believe. The man in white was believed to be their minder, their keeper. And the only explanation I heard yesterday from, again, terrorism experts, a new cottage industry since 9/11, is that he was their keeper, he was their minder, he was the guy to keep them on task, on track, to make sure that they didn't bug out and leave, that they finished what they were there to do. Now, all of this will be found out or not in some way. We know one of the brothers now rented a house under a false identity. That rental of the house under the false identity led to the raid last Friday that led to the capture of the missing Paris suspect. That man remains in custody, appears to be cooperating on some level, but not fast enough to stop yesterday. The house that was rented was where a bad guy from Paris was caught, and some contraband was picked up, weapons, bombs, making things. So there was a direct tie between the two. That doesn't mean the arrest triggered yesterday for any other reason than what we thought we knew yesterday, and that being that the arrest could have meant that the Paris suspect was talking, would have fingered the brothers or the man in white, and that would have led to a speeding up of their agenda, or in fact, there was some signal passed. Now, there's a couple of folks who do the news channel thing who seem to know more about this terrorism game than others, who indicated that there's a real lack of commitment to the radical cause by the Paris suspect. He didn't kill himself in Paris, and he didn't kill himself in a shootout with authorities when they were taking him in. So in their view, he would be more likely to talk, and that could have been what triggered yesterday. The fact is the damage was done, but it could have been a lot worse. There was a cabbie in Brussels that picked up the three men to take them to the airport and immediately noticed they were suspicious. This goes to the idea that if you see something, say something, even if you report it anonymously. This cabbie was not allowed to touch their bags, put the bags in, and they had too much luggage to go to the airport. Now, why wouldn't you call another Uber? Why wouldn't you call another cab? Why wouldn't you travel separately? Again, that seems to indicate that man in white insisted on traveling with the brothers together. So instead, they took some of the bags they couldn't fit into the cab that they wouldn't allow the cabbie to touch back into this apartment. When the cabbie dropped these three off at the airport, he called the authorities. The authorities then went to this apartment where he picked them up and found these bags that were left behind, which included a nail bomb and other explosives that would have made the carnage at the airport much worse. So inadvertently, lives were saved. So as you wake up this morning, again, as usually is the case, be glad you're here and not there, and the people of Brussels are trying to come to grips with the fact that they're going to be living under some sort of equivalent of martial law for the immediate future until they try to find out where the rest of them are. and them in this case are the others in black and in white suits that are poised to do this again.
And Steve, there is actually another development. If I could jump in,
just the arrest
quickly. With this arrest, and it's coming from Sky News. I've been monitoring Sky News this morning, and they've reported that the British government has relaxed its travel warning that it had put in place after yesterday. The commentators on Sky News suggesting that perhaps the Brussels, the Belgian government, has now arrested all of the suspects they think were at the center of this, and so that they think the threat may be decreased somewhat now. The development with Britain, relaxing that travel warning that they'd put in place yesterday is a significant.
It's very odd. It's very odd. Yeah. 24 hours later, that you'd go, all good.
Yeah, unless they have some intel that these were the people that they knew were going to do this, and they have them all, or they're dead.
Huh. Well, so, that's great news if, in fact, it plays out that way.
Yeah.
More from Steve throughout the morning, 6:16. Let's get to Mary with the traffic trouble spots. And coming up, I'll tell you a little bit about last night's presidential primaries and caucuses. Eric Gutierski from Brussels on that arrest, just mentioned by Steve, and what it means. Coming up here from ABC News in just a second.
The thoughts and the prayers of the American people are with the people of Belgium. And we stand in solidarity with them in condemning these outrageous attacks against innocent people. This is yet another reminder that the world must unite. We must be together, regardless of nationality or race or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism.
Steve Cochran Show. We continue with Eric Gutierski from ABC News. Is he on the phone with us? Mike? Gutierski on the phone with us? Yeah. Let me go there now. Good morning, Aaron. How are you?
Oh, good morning. From Brussels, a city on the edge, although a city celebrating, I think, a significant arrest of a third man seen on that surveillance image from the airport with two brothers believed to have blown themselves up at the airport, and this third man may well have been involved in building those explosives.
So he was the man in white, as far as we know?
The so-called man in white that you see with the two brothers who have the black glove on each of their left hands, indicating that they're concealing some kind of detonator, perhaps. The authorities are expected to speak here, Steve, in the next few hours, perhaps to give us a little bit more clarity as to who they arrested, what his role might have been, and whether, as it's thought by some, he actually had a hand in the Paris attacks. There have been a number of connections between Brussels and Paris, and we're waiting for those to be made even clearer.
Do you have any clarity on the cabbie story that we've heard, that they picked these three up?
It's interesting. The cabbie who drove these guys to the airport seems to have been the one to recognize them in surveillance footage and then go to the authorities. And he told the authorities that they didn't want any help with their bags and all that. But he seems to have been the one to have led them to make the identification. And that's been helpful in identifying the two brothers who were known to authorities through their criminal records, although they didn't have any known connection to terrorism, at least until yesterday.
Brussels is not a huge city, but it's a populated city in the middle of a very small country and really is the center of Europe with very important things there. Now, it was shut down after Paris almost completely. What is the state on the streets this morning?
There are people out and about now, and, you know, we've seen kids going to school, albeit under, you know, the watchful eye of many grown-ups, and there's a lot of police on the streets, some streets blocked off, a couple of metro stations still closed, but I think Brussels was really keen to show that it's back on its feet and would not cower. So many transit lines have reopened. The airport, though, is still closed and would remain closed through tomorrow. We're not sure when it's going to reopen. We expect maybe at the end of the week. There's still a real fear here, though, and I think across Europe that more may be coming. All you have to do is read the latest State Department bulletin to know that, especially as Easter approaches, more attacks could be in the offing.
What is the state of travel in and out of Brussels?
There isn't much. It was nothing by plane. Some rail lines are operable now, and we drove in. I came in via Amsterdam, and you know the roads are okay. If a little bit clogged, the closer you get into downtown.
And you expect a briefing, you said, later. Any other developments coming in the next few hours?
No, I mean, I think the arrest is significant. There had been a manhunt underway throughout this capital for the last 24 hours. So the arrest is significant, and then we'll wait to hear what specific details the authorities have learned about the attacks in the last several hours.
I want you to go on this, but it appears that people have to talk to lead to an arrest as quickly as that. And this has been very much a no-snitch community, closed community. Can we surmise there's some crack in that now?
Well, we're not sure. One of the theories is that the arrest last Friday of the remaining Paris attacker, Salah Abdeslam, accelerated the plans for the attacks here in Brussels, perhaps fearing that he would talk or would reveal some additional information. So they did, as one theory goes, they accelerated their plans for doing whatever they were going to do in Brussels, and more may yet be coming. In searches around the city, they found evidence of other attacks, chemicals and weapons, and that's part of why things here are still on edge.
Aaron Kotersky, ABC News. Stay safe, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
See ya. That's Aaron on the phone from ABC. Always does nice work, and he's one of those guys, Kotersky, like Anderson Cooper. He just got a picture that they've got a bag next to the door, and when the S hits the fan anywhere mm-hmm. in the world, they go, Kotersky, get on a plane.
Yep. Or in this case, driving in from Amsterdam.
Right. Which was the title of my last album, as you remember.
I remember that.
Yeah, driving in from Amsterdam.
I had the CD.
Let's bring it back a little more close to home. Last night in the primaries and caucuses, Clinton and Trump win big in Arizona. Ted Cruz wins big in Utah, and Bernie Sanders wins big in Utah and Idaho. I don't have Idaho in front of me. I'm assuming Cruz won Idaho as well. I'd have to look. But then, by the way, that's the only time I've ever said the sentence, I don't have Idaho in front of me, and probably the last time. But Sanders continues to trail badly in delegates because of the Democrat system of superdelegates, and Trump continues to lead wildly in the Republican side because of the winner-take-all status of Arizona. His lead got a little bigger.
Cruz did win Idaho.
So Cruz yes. and Sanders both win two.
Yeah, 45%.
Trump and Hillary each win one. And Kasich took the night off, according to the people that didn't vote for him. So they move on. We'll give you the primary and caucus schedule coming up. And at 6:27, we'll talk about our Hawks coming up as well. Oh, man. Not good.
How long is the Blackhawks Express?
I think today we don't even do it.
Well, we have to do it.
No, I think we go a moment of silence. Moment of silence for last night's game.
Okay.
And for the streak. Unless there's a cut. Is the Hawks at Mike Jacobson is producing. Is it cut? It is? How long is it? Turn your mic on. How long is it?
2.2 seconds.
Too long.
It was about as long as the Blackhawks were actually in the game last night.
WGN Sports, Joel Quenneville wanted to see the Blackhawks come out with urgency against the Dallas Stars, but it was the Stars who played that way. They scored two goals in 25 seconds in the first period, four goals by the first intermission, and they bashed the Hawks 6-2. Our Xfinity Blackhawks report, sixth loss in seven games for the Hawks. They're fourth in five against the first-place Stars. St. Louis also won last night, so the Blackhawks are 6 points behind Dallas, four behind the Blues, just eight games to go. The Tampa Bay Rays beat the Cuban national team 4-1 in Havana in the first appearance by a major league team in Cuba since 1999. At Cubs camp, a mime led the Cubs through their stretches.
I'm sorry, Dave. I thought you said a mime.
The Cubs led the Cubs through their stretches. I don't know why.
Is this another example of the skipper and his wacky, fun, good times?
Yes. Yeah,
Did the mime emerge from his van?
No,
because I'm thinking in that van, there's a whole lot of stuff.
There's jugglers. Yeah there's
so
animal acts.
Cirque du Soleil in the back of that van.
Pretty much, yeah. Not sure where the mime was. But then the game, Jason Hammel, another solid outing and a 9-6 win over the Reds. Sox edge the Giants 8-7. The Dodgers' Andre Ethier out up to 14 weeks, broke his right tibia when he fouled a ball off it on Friday. And NFL owners approved some rules changes, including keeping the PAT where it was last season, snapped from the 15-yard line, and eliminating the chop block.
But they still will not address the most idiotic rule of the National Football League. What is a catch?
Yeah, they won't. They said, we'll just explain it better.
There's no way to explain it better.
No, no. It's the process of the catch, the whole deal.
Well, there's got to be somebody on the rules committee or some group of owners who is fighting this fight because they want to win, not because it's the right thing to do. Because anybody with a functioning brain can watch any Sunday in the National Football League and go, what do you mean that's not a catch? Yeah. Or what do you mean that is a catch?
Right.
So clear it up.
Yeah, and if, I don't know. It was never this complicated before.
Never.
Right?
Never, never, never. They made it 10 times worse.
Yeah, they said they're going to do a better job getting the word out on what constitutes a catch.
They can't explain it. It's like the FCC trying to explain what pornography is. Yeah. They can't explain it.
Good point.
Yeah, all right. So we'll see. Give me Goodell on the phone.
We'll work on that.
Not Roger, his cousin, Sal.
Sal Goodell?
Yeah.
You guys go back a long way.
Long time.
Yep. Dave Edit, WGN Sports.
And now this. We take a break here? What are we doing? Don't we go to the weather here? Isn't this a weather break?
That would be Steve.
Wouldn't that be Grzanich doing the weather? Where's Grzanich? Is Grzanich down? Did Grzanich fall? Forecast. Let me go find it. Here it is right here. Cloudy this afternoon. Showers become likely, a high of 46. Tonight, rain likely, storms possible, low 45. Thursday, morning rain likely, afternoon rain and snow showers. Measurable snow possible north. Wow. That's Thursday afternoon. Temps falling into the mid-30s, and then Friday, sunny, high 46 inland. Saturday, clouds increase. Scattered showers possible, mostly in the afternoon. And then Easter Sunday, clouds and scattered showers. Saturday, 54, 46 on Easter Sunday. And then we get back into 50-plus for the highs in the early next week, and then back into the 60s. But the next 4 or 5 days, a little dicey. Just in regards to, you know, winter trying to make an ugly comeback.
And Easter is going to be yucky.
If anyone sees newsman Steve Grzanich, please let us know. He's apparently missing or has joined the witness protection program. It's 6:40, and that's this. And now, here's that.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti's at K Conti Law. She joins us now. Good morning, Ms. Conti.
Good morning, Steve.
Did you hear about this? One of the survivors of the attack in Brussels. It's like his third brush with death. It's an amazing story. I'm going to get the details while you talk about some of the things in the law, because a lot of things come out of these horrific terrorist attacks, and you go, wow, what an amazing sidebar story. This would be one of them. But in the meantime, let's begin with Sandra Bland. What can you tell me?
Well, the police officer who stopped her is being charged with perjury. He said that, you know, he stopped her and then wanted to just search her car because he wanted to make sure the arrest was safe. And apparently there's a videotape that kind of belies that. And basically the grand jury said, no, that's perjury. That's something that's material and it's false and you lied. And so he's being charged with perjury, although not a big deal, misdemeanor. He probably will be fired, but there's not going to be jail time or anything like that.
And this case then goes where in regards to the family's pursuit for their, you know, their idea of what justice needs to be?
Well, the criminal justice system is not going to prosecute anyone for her death or anything relating to whether it was a suicide or not. But there is a wrongful death civil lawsuit that the family brought down in Texas, and of course, that has a different, whole different element, and they're asking for damages relating to not taking care of her while she was in the prison cell, to say the least. So, you know, that'll be pursued. They're, you know, they didn't get a whole lot of justice here, and I'm not sure we'll ever know exactly what happened in that jail cell.
You know, death, you know, this sounds like such a ridiculous statement, but death changes things legally. And I thought about this yesterday in regards to Rob Ford, the Toronto mayor dying, who had legal issues as well. Some of them specific, you know, drug cases against him that were going to be brought, weren't brought, whatever the case may be. But there are a couple of civil suits that are possibly pending. When someone dies, are family members ever liable for their potential criminal action or even a civil case?
Yeah, that's a good question. And generally speaking, most of these lawsuits do survive death, meaning let's just say that you die and you have $100,000 in your estate, meaning you have a house and you have some bank accounts. Those lawsuits can proceed, and then that judgment would be satisfied with your assets. And all of those debts have to be satisfied before the family gets anything. So, no, the family doesn't have to pay out of their own money, but before they inherit any of the funds, all of the debts from that estate have to be paid, and that includes the lawsuits.
In that case, you know, the way to protect yourself from them is what? Get rid of the loser before he dies. I'm not even making fun of Rob Ford here. Good God, the man just died. But it just seems like, you know, you're never really out of the hot box if you've got a loose cannon in the family.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, you know, if you live a careless life and you leave behind you some lawsuits, the best thing to do is to give away your assets before you die, you know. So, but you know, I don't know if there's any way you can protect yourself. If you get lawsuits against you, they're going to proceed. And again, if you want to leave your family something, all the debts have to be paid first.
Seems like we may have a solution in the Apple FBI battle. A lot of news came out yesterday that the court hearing was postponed and that maybe there was some sort of solution. We'll talk to Karen about that in a second. But that story I mentioned at the top, Mason Wells, Karen, 19 years old. He was injured in the bombing at the Brussels airport along with two other American Mormon missionaries. He got a ruptured Achilles tendon, shrapnel injuries, and second and third degree burns on his face and hands from the bombing. This is his third, he's 19. This is his third terrorist attack. He was a block from the Boston Marathon bombing.
Ugh.
One block. And I'm trying to find the third one that they referenced. Well, that's nice reporting. It's not actually in the story. I will find it here. But his hope is to join the U.S. Naval Academy. But the third time at the age of 19 that he's almost been killed by terrorists.
I mean, yeah, three different places. Apparently Paris, Brussels, and then the Boston. So it's not even like he was hanging out in one dangerous city. He was in three cities and was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Kind of a strange coincidence.
Oh, was Paris the other one? It's not in the story.
So, yeah.
I'm looking at. How do you make sense of that when you're 19?
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't know. And it's got to affect you profoundly. And then, you know, the world's becoming a different kind of place. I mean, we're all having to deal with the threats. And, you know, yesterday the courthouse was all on lockdown and everyone was being, you know, searched. And, you know, this we're in a different world now.
If I was in Boston, Paris, and Brussels, I would not leave the house anymore. I would have everything brought to me. I would just occasionally peek outside the window. I'd actually hire an intern to look outside for me. Is the coast clear? Doesn't matter. I'm still not leaving. It's 6:46. Let's get traffic into more with Karen Conti in a second. You can follow Karen at K Conti Law, C-O-N-T-I, K Conti Law, and we'll get the office number and everything for you in a sec. Karen Conti, if we need to get a hold of you because, you know, we've broken the law and we're sorry, how do we find you?
You can find me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
And, of course, all of your clients are innocent?
They are all innocent, and if they weren't innocent when they came to me, they're innocent when they leave.
There's a four-year-old boy whose mother was apparently trying to teach him about guns, and he ends up shooting mom. Now, mom could end up getting charged in this. How does this all work?
Well, there are some laws in some states regarding, you know, giving children negligent access to firearms, and apparently they were driving down the road. The kid took the gun and shot her. And now she faces charges for allowing him access to that gun. Kind of an interesting twist, and kind of sounds like it doesn't make sense. But I don't know. I have my views on guns, and I think that we need to have better laws and better enforcement of storage issues. You know, there are many states that don't have any laws at all about storing a gun.
That's ridiculous.
You can't be criminally responsible for, you know, the statistics are that 75% of all kids that live in a house with guns under the age of 10 know exactly where their parents' gun is.
Of course they do.
And I, I mean, and that's, you know, that's that. I guess we shouldn't be that surprised. But if they do, that's a scary thing. Then it better be put in a safe place that's locked away. And when parents don't do that, they really should be criminally responsible, because that's going to make things safer in the long run.
Well, I can tell you, and again, as a supporter of legal Second Amendment rights, but I can tell you right now, if you are not the victim of a crime, and you have a relative, borrow your gun or you lend your gun to somebody and there's commission of a crime, you absolutely ought to be charged. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Why do we have restrictions on cars, but we don't have restrictions on guns? What are you talking about?
You know, it's, and I know the NRA has to take a position because it's a slippery slope, as they say. But
no, the NRA has become a joke. The NRA started out with the right idea years and years ago. The NRA's position is don't change anything. We do what we want, and controls way too much of Washington.
And literally, you know, they have lobbied because the federal law, they've tried to change the federal law to make there some kind of national standard about storing guns. If we're going to have all the guns that we have in this country, there should be some national laws. And they have been just so adamant that there should be no laws whatsoever about storing a gun. And maybe it should be a state-by-state law. But, you know, when you have a case like this and it seems like a strange outcome that you get shot by your own kid and then you get charged, I guess it really does make sense because, you know, it could have been her, it could have been somebody else.
This nonsense that the Second Amendment is going to be overturned is nothing but political BS, because you'd have to literally get a country that has probably never been more politically divided to agree on something, and we can't get the country to agree on anything. So forget about the idea that your Second Amendment rights are going to go away. They're not. Any legitimate Second Amendment supporter who is thinking clearly on this and doesn't buy into the nonsense would agree that we need to support the gun laws that we have, and we need reasonable expectations of how to care for a weapon, and reasonable changing of the laws we have that don't make sense. For instance, if I'm an abuser, if I'm a convicted spouse abuser, how do I have a right to have a gun? Why would I be able to get a gun? If I have mental illness in my past, why should I be able to get a gun?
I mean, I agree. And I think that what we have to look at is on social issues that have already been ruled upon. I mean, we've had legislation, we've had executive orders, and we've had the Supreme Court rule on the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is in place. And, you know, I think Illinois was the last law to be stricken down as far as prohibiting guns. We have guns here. There is no Second Amendment issue anymore. Now, can there be regulations? Yes, but we have the right to have guns. That issue has been spoken on, and it's done. It's the same with gay marriage. We're not going to go backwards on this. This is the way it is. But there has to be rules about, you know, how these things are implemented. And again, I agree with you. The NRA is not doing themselves any favors because, you know, anyone who's responsible, anyone who knows guns knows that you have to be careful and you have to be trained and you have to keep the gun in a safe place.
You know, my favorite one is if you're on a no-fly list and can't get on an airplane to fly, and this is particularly relevant, obviously, this week, it doesn't affect your ability to get a gun. Well, I can't fly, but I can go home and I can grab my gun. I mean, come on. And the argument against that is, well, there's a lot of mistakes on the no-fly list. Yeah, okay, well, clear up the mistake then. If you're not supposed to be on it, then go home and clear up the mistake. But in the meantime, if you're on a no-fly list, I'd prefer you not have a weapon until you do. I mean, it's just ridiculous. All right, so after the Brussels attack yesterday, there is a tie to the Apple-FBI battle. But then again, we hear the Apple-FBI battle may be over. I don't know. There's some gray to this story, isn't there?
Yeah, there's some talk that the FBI found some way to get into this phone outside of using Apple technicians to do it, and so they're not going to pursue their attempts to try to get Apple to do it. And this whole thing is really interesting because there have been laws now that have been proposed, and there was one that I just read about that was proposed in New York, where they're going to require phone companies to use some sort of backdoor encryption system so that, yes, everything's encrypted, but there has to be a backdoor that the government can use to get to people's phones. And, you know, these issues are very interesting because we all feel the right to privacy and we all want to make sure that no one has access to our private information. On the other hand, with these kinds of attacks and terrorism, you feel like you need to get in and see certain people's telephones, but who are those people? It's a slippery slope. And And I think we're going to see more laws or attempted passage of laws that require companies to put in this backdoor encryption system.
That'll be an ongoing fight, to be sure, right?
Absolutely.
Karen Conti at K Conti Law, KConTilaw. Thank you very much. Have a delightful Wednesday.
You too. Happy Easter to all.
Oh, there you go. Thank you very much for that.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN Chicago.
709, Trump and Hillary win Arizona. Cruz takes the other two caucuses last night. On the Democrat side, Bernie does the same. Trump and Hillary walk away with the most delegates. By the way, Trump, as usual, you stay classy, Donald. In the midst of yesterday's travesty in Brussels, in a conversation with Wolf Blitzer, Donald Trump called Brussels a hellhole. Sweet. Very nice. And also referenced Ted Cruz's wife. There is a picture of Melania. And by the way, it's a terrific photograph of Melania from Melania Trump from a GQ shoot and a super PAC, which is not allegedly tied to Cruz, though it could be because he's a dishonest liar as well. Cruz said it's not my commercial, and used the picture of Melania in a commercial, and Trump responded with a tweet that said, "Be careful, Lion Ted. I might spill the beans on your wife." We don't know what the beans are, but yesterday Donald Trump and Ted Cruz mixed it up a little bit, and Trump, in the course of a very short period of time, managed to bring in the wife and called a city attacked by terrorists a hellhole. You stay classy, Donald.
Doesn't he do a lot of that? I'll spill the beans. Mm-hmm. He kind of did that with the rickets.
What's the update on that story?
The Cubs.
Is there anything?
Cubs are not engaging, or the rickets are not engaging in any kind of back and forth with him.
And there's no reason to assume that Donald Trump knows something you don't know. Have you heard him? It's 7-Eleven. And Blaise Supich, Archbishop Blaise Supich, previous guest on this show, was terrific. He's engaging. He's going to be on with David Plyer sometime soon. When is that going to be, Mr. Plyer?
That is going to be on Easter morning.
Well, that seems appropriate.
And good morning to you.
And how are you?
I am excellent.
How did you forge your relationship with the Archbishop?
You know, it's one of those things where, as one of the 2.2 million Catholics in Chicago, I don't feel like I know a lot about this guy. He does very rare interviews. He's spoken to you. He's done a couple of the TV outlets. But, you know, just announced about a month ago that that he was going to have a new initiative called Renew My Church, which the news media immediately reported that hundreds of churches were going to be closing in Chicago, and I kind of wanted to get to the bottom of it. And I sent him a nice little email and said, "We'd love to have you on Easter morning." And he said, "I'll give you 5 minutes." And I said, "Like a half hour?" And he said, "Okay."
5 minutes to a half an hour.
That's
on a
right.
Very busy day for him. Nice
That's
job
right.
of persuading
right.
for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
The notion that a bunch of churches are closing, true or not true?
There will be churches that will close. The biggest deal is that out of the 351 parishes, there's only going to be about 240 pastors available. And although there's about 600 priests in Chicago, many of them are going to be retiring. And, you know, the average guy retires at 55 to 67 years old. Priests retire at 75 to 80. But that is the largest percentage of priests that we have here in Chicago are much older.
And is it because of the Catholic Church, my words, not yours, or the Vatican's, the Catholic Church's narrow view of who can be a priest is keeping the priest population from where it should be?
That could be part of it. And also priests being married or not being married, women being priests and so forth. Absolutely. There's actually quite a bit of men in seminaries that will become priests at that time, but that doesn't mean that they're going to immediately become pastors. It's like saying, "I'm going to get my bachelor's and master's and go run a division of a company." That's not going to happen right out of the box.
And it's no good for those particular churches if you suddenly take people who aren't ready to be priests and
Correct.
Make them priests.
That's right.
It should be an interesting thing. Happens this Sunday morning.
This Sunday morning, Easter morning. And available, of course, at WGNradio.com if you can't stay up or get up too early.
And has a conversation taken place yet?
It's taken place. I'm going to actually do it the day before at his residence.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Look
yeah.
at you.
He's got a radio studio, like a full radio and television studio over there at the Quigley Center.
Oh, I heard he had a one-bedroom loft, you know, center loop.
Does he have a confessional in there as well?
And a popcorn maker.
Wow.
Hey, speaking of confessions there, Catholic Mary, did you go to confession?
That's a personal question.
Yeah, yeah, it is, and I asked it.
We can do it right now.
Oh, really? We can. Yeah. Bless me, well, Father, both, for I have sinned.
You both? When was the last time you two have been to confession?
Together? I don't think we've ever been
together. No.
Oh. Is there a double booth? I don't think that's how it's supposed to work.
Single booth.
It might have been a little while. Now I feel like I need to go when I leave here.
I know.
I would just
talk about Catholic guilt. Thanks a lot, Steve.
This is like flossing before you go to the dentist. You're going to talk to the Archbishop this weekend. Wouldn't you go to confession?
You can just confess with him.
I was going to wash my hands.
Why don't you go and confess that you haven't been to confession?
I could do that.
Talk to him about this big push for confession, because that's been an
ongoing initiative all year.
I'm going to bring that up.
They've really been pushing it this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
At my church, at
I've
least.
I've noted that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In all the sermons.
It was like hours of forgiveness yesterday.
Yes.
At my church.
Oh, good for you.
For you or for everybody?
No, just for everybody.
Okay. So Easter Sunday morning.
Easter Sunday
with
morning.
With David Plyer, and then you're going to have it up on podcast right away?
We will have it on podcast right away. That's a great way to discover all these shows that you can't get to, of course, is at WGNradio.com.
Sure. You got another Plyer interview you want to plug that's up there right now that people can pick?
Best
of Plyer?
Best of Plyer.
Plyer compilation?
Recently had Carl Reiner, legendary
Carl
Reiner.
Just the best.
He was a lot of fun. He was a lot of fun. Johnny Galecki from Big Bang Theory. A couple weeks, we're going to have Robert Lamb from Chicago. He's getting inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so we're going to talk to him as well.
Nice job by
Good
you.
Good stuff. Thank you, sir.
So if you're up late trying to make bail Saturday night, Sunday morning, Plyer's always a good listen, but catch him on podcast if those aren't your hours.
Thank you, sir.
Plus he brings good donuts.
And he does bring donuts.
I do. I do good donuts.
Yes, you do.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks. Take the attack.
.722 Oh, man. At the end of the second period last night, it was 5-1, and I went to bed because I was tired. I don't think I was as tired as the Hawks were at the stop of the game. You know, this is the thing now. We've talked about this for a couple of years. Nobody's played more hockey than the Hawks have. From the Olympics to the postseason to the preseason to all the extra things the Hawks are asked to do, it's a lot of hockey. And maybe that's what's going on. Maybe they're starting to pay the price. Maybe we have some tired legs here. This is a stretch now. Lost 6 out of 7. Is that right?
6 out of 7.
This is a stretch that I don't remember. I don't remember a 6 out of 7 stretch, and I don't remember them appearing. Because the weird thing, the anomaly, was the Winnipeg game, which they really controlled throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Winnipeg is, you know, some minor league team. That's the real deal. But outside of the Winnipeg game, they've looked like they've been off kilter now for, what, the better part of 2 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the 6 out of 7, but it's within that 6 out of 7 where they had that 5-0 loss to the Kings.
Yep.
They had a 5, I think it was 5-2 in Dallas.
They don't lose 5-2. They don't lose 6-2. They don't lose 5-0.
That's I think the red flag.
Yeah,
they've given up these big first periods, 2 or 3 goals in the first. Last night 4. It's just uncharacteristic. They just haven't played that way.
First goal was an insane bounce that you never see. A 1 in 1,000 off the stick handle of Scott Darling. But when you have one of those, then they seem like they missed the urgency of protecting that back line 10, 15, 20 seconds later.
Yeah.
And then you get a second one.
Yeah. From behind the net again.
Yeah. So now you got 2. The next one, Darling would probably tell you he should have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 3, and then you get a shorthanded goal when Kaner gives up the puck. And, again, a weird bounce, but, again, plays the Hawks always make and plays they don't give up.
And Dallas was quicker to the puck. And in that case, Fiddler was all over it as soon as that puck hopped over Kane's stick. And it's just plays like that. You know, it's those 50-50 kind of plays where you got to get to the puck first, and normally they do. So
now we're not saying anything that Joel Quenneville and the Hawks staff doesn't know.
You think they know this?
I think they know this. I think they realize this, and I think they're on this.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to now, because there's no other apparent injuries that we're aware of, a team with the best talent in the league by far, that even got more talented at the break. And I don't know any other explanation other than fatigue. And you can't beat fatigue when you're heading into the playoffs. So now it comes down to heart. And you know they have the heart to do it. You know they have the heart to win it. I'd argue the team they won the cup with last year had much less talent than this team has, top to bottom. You had a lot of youth on that team. You had that back line of defense. You know, after your first three defenders, you go, okay, who wants to play now? You know, so that was a big deal because of injuries. You got a stocked team now. So it comes down to these guys going, three's nice. We want four. We want four. We want five. We want more. I know they can do it. You know they can do it. I'd be willing to bet Dave's car that they will do it.
Okay. Could it be something else we bet?
No, not really. It's a nice car.
You know, if you think about it, that 12-game winning streak, if they had gone, if they hadn't had that 12-game winning streak, let's say they go 6-6, because they've been under 500 since then, I don't know they make the playoffs.
They'd be right on the break, or they'd be right over the bubble right now.
Let's see, they have 42 wins. They'd be at 36 wins. They'd take away 12
and
points.
And six more losses.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, so it would be dicey. But again, the team that won 12 straight, they're still here.
Those are the guys.
Those are the guys.
Yeah.
We didn't replace them with a less talented team. So take heart, Hawks fans. It's a dark, dark turn of events here, but the last 2 weeks, too, shall pass. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe it. Next game is when?
Next game will be on Saturday, which is also a good thing. They get a little bit of a breather.
Right.
They play in Calgary on Saturday. They got back-to-backers Saturday at Calgary, Sunday at Vancouver.
I'm guaranteeing, Dave.
Oh, no, don't.
Don't do it.
Maybe you shouldn't.
I'm guaranteeing both games will be played.
And heard right here on WGN.
That's what I'm guaranteeing.
You could bet your car. Bet your
car?
No,
I can't give up the ice blue Chevy Impala.
The ice man.
I'd like to do it for you, but I really can't. Here are your clues. We have stuffed a puck in a celebrity's pants. Here are your first three clues at 312-981-7200. He or she is courageous. They're courageous. This individual is a person of many, many talents.
Courageous talents.
And while not tall in stature, tall in comedic talent. Huh? See what I did there? Huh? Yeah, right. Oh. Right.
Courageous, many talents.
Many talents.
A short.
Not tall in stature, but tall in
comedic talents.
A short, funny man.
You could say that. Yeah, you could absolutely say that.
But a brave.
Yes, a brave short, funny man.
Short, funny man. Look what you did. You deduced that. Look at you guys.
Yes, got it.
You're like the Sherlock Holmes of stupid on this show. It's really good. He's courageous. I said he. He's courageous. He's a man of many talents. He's not tall in stature, but he's tall in comedic talent. Any guesses? Anybody think they know?
I think I know. I don't want to say.
Michael in Crystal Lake. Who is it?
It is Mr. Pat Tomasulo.
How did you know that?
You kind of gave it away with the short in stature.
So all I have to say is he's short and automatically it's Tomasulo?
Short and funny.
Short and funny. He's the only short, funny guy. All right, roll it.
This is Pat Tomasulo from the WGN Morning News, and I have a puck in my pants, and it feels so good.
I knew it would get weird. Congratulations, Michael. You are a big, big winner.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Trump and Hillary win Arizona. Bernie and Ted Cruz win the caucuses. Or would it be the caucus-i? That's your summation from last night. Standing by for Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institute. Where are we at with that, Mike? Is he ready to rock? We are about
Kevin
to get
him. Kevin is still efforting him, but should be up shortly.
Okay. Michael O'Hanlon, who is a guy that understands, again, the bad guys around the world and the weapons they use and frankly, how to stop them. I'm bringing back, and this will be exciting for Mary, I'm bringing back a game show, a very popular game show on this show, with prizes from the prize list. Do you guys remember this? Is it a band at Lollapalooza?
Oh boy.
Or is it a band I was in?
Great game show.
Yes.
I'm eliminating
Dave,
the
Dave's
third
really
category.
Good at
I did have, is it a band, is it not a band, or is it a band I was in? I thought that confused some people. So we'll make it simple. Is it a band at Lollapalooza, or is it a band I was in?
Plus, you were in so many bands.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
What if it's neither one?
What do you mean if it's neither one?
It couldn't. Well, I guess you've been in so many bands it couldn't be.
You never played Lollapalooza.
I've never been invited. Which is really crazy when you think about it.
Because you wouldn't have gone anyway.
No, I don't. If you listen, all I want to be is invited. I don't show up. But all I want to be is invited. Now, I'm going to make an exception to that because tomorrow night is Andrea Darlis's Better Business Bureau honor.
Yes.
Oh, right.
And
right.
I've been
that
asked
is fantastic.
To do my mime work there. I'm going to go and be the mime on stage at the Better Business Bureau.
So you've been invited and you're going?
Yeah, I am going.
It's
are you
going to
do something?
Rare daily double.
No, I am going. Have you met Andrea?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I told Andrea I was going and then I didn't, that would not be healthy for me.
Well, not very nice either.
Did we tell her we were going?
I didn't get the... No,
I wasn't invited.
No. So. I didn't get the invite, no.
You guys are probably busy going over the kids of the week so far. So
yes,
you can have
we're working
fun.
On yes. that.
As you prepare for the end of the year.
And Idol's on, too, so forget it.
American Idol?
Yes.
Are you the only one still watching it?
Probably. It's still pretty. It's the last year you have to watch it. It's the last one.
You know, I have tickets for Harry Connick Jr. on May 18th.
Yeah.
He's the bad guy on Idol, right?
No, not really.
Is there a bad guy?
No.
Wasn't that why
Keith Urban's not bad? And
isn't that
Jennifer
why they struggled?
Is not bad. He just tells it like it is. He's not a Simon bad guy, which is really bad.
Simon, by the way, is going to be replacing Howard Stern on America's Got Talent for you reality show watchers.
Oh, boy.
Didn't he create that show?
Yeah, it's his show.
Probably.
Yeah. Started with Britain's Got Talent. Speaking of reality TV, and again, we're continuing to try to find Mr. O'Hanlon. But while we wait, Sarah Palin's in the news. Remember Sarah Palin?
Yes.
Governor of Alaska, running mate of John McCain, supporter of Donald Trump. She has just signed a deal to become a courtroom TV judge.
Like Judge Judy?
Yeah, exactly like Judge
Judy. Yikes. Judge Sarah?
The Montana-based production company that signed her specializes in outdoor shows and programming for the National Rifle Association. Now, how does this get to a courtroom show? Well, this will be the first time they do a courtroom show. These judge shows are huge. They just do incredibly well. It'll be produced by someone named Larry Little, who also produced Judge Judy and Judge Joe Brown. The pilot doesn't mean it's going to be picked up and sold into syndication, but Palin is obviously a big name, so there's a pretty good chance that it will be. She looks good on TV. She's not afraid to give her training. She doesn't need to legally be a judge because you're simply judging TV cases. But the question is, what will the format be and what will it look like and all of those things. So just one more thing to add to your viewing schedule, Mary, as Vice President of Reality TV for the Steve Cochran Show.
Oh, do I have to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is she? Isn't her husband still sick? Or he got injured in that snowmobile accident.
He got busted up big time.
Yeah. She should be taking care of him.
You know, he barely talked during the 2008 rollout of her, you know, national and international fame. And we haven't heard much of him since. Wouldn't it be funny if he wouldn't stop talking now? He hit his head really hard, and now he won't shut up.
It would be good. Her show would probably be canceled.
So Sarah Palin, Judge Sarah, coming soon. And who knows what's under that robe. .752 Got a little time we didn't plan on having here, so I'm going to play back for you as well. Yesterday's Coach Q, Eleanor, and me. I'll explain in just a second, but let's go to the phone here and let's play. Band from Lollapalooza or a band Steve was in? John is the contestant. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, and how are you guys?
We're doing fine. Are you a big music guy?
Only a Steve Cochran band.
I understand. What was the last concert you went to?
That would actually be Ozzy Osbourne and Motley Crue opened up for him, and that was at the Rosemont Horizon.
Mostly ballads that night, I'm assuming?
Oh, yes, love ballads.
Yeah, of course. I will give you the band. You tell me if it was a band from Lollapalooza or a band I was in. The band is Potty Mouth. Is that a band from Lollapalooza? I'm sorry?
Lollapalooza.
Oh, look at you. Yeah, congratulations. That's exactly right. You've got the ding, ding, ding. Ah, there you go. Is that the ding? We got a one dinger? We should really have a double dinger. There you go. Congratulations. Would you like to risk the prizes you've already earned and play again?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Granny's Gun Show. Granny's Gun Show. Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
And you were in.
Is that... Wow. You are doing so well. I feel I must tell you what prizes you have now. You've won tickets to see Harry Connick Jr. at the Chicago Theater presented by Jam Productions. And for a guy that likes the music you like, that should be a great night for you. Tickets available at the Chicago Theater box office, Ticketmaster.com or 800-745-3000. And you've won free pie from Baker Square, the best pie in America this Easter. Order your pies at bakersquare.com. You want to go one more time?
Oh, no, I do not. If I mess up the Harry Connick thing, my wife would kill me.
That's a good move by you. Well said. Hold the line, and we'll get your vital information.
Isn't Granny's Gun Show opening for Harry Connick?
Well, not now.
No?
Yeah, not now.
Okay.
Is Michael okay later, or are we going to talk to him now? What's better for him? Are you talking to him now? Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Michael O'Hanlon from the Brookings Institute in a moment on the Brussels situation and more. And don't you fret, Dave. Don't you fret, Mary. We're going to play more Lollapalooza or a band I was in later.
Oh, boy.
Okay. This is Steve Cochran. This is 720 WGN. It's 7:55. Steve Cochran Show continues. Michael O'Hanlon is one of my favorite guests and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, specializing in defense and foreign policy issues, and a regular go-to expert when things get tough. It does seem, Michael, like we never talk about good stuff. Maybe I should just call you with good news occasionally.
That would be nice. Yeah, but thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about Brussels right out of the gate in regards to what we know or what we think we know. Is it the hotbed of terrorist activity that's been reported?
Well, certainly this one neighborhood, this Molenbeek neighborhood of about 100,000, is one of the hotbeds and probably one of the historically least well understood and least patrolled, least plugged into the broader society. It's, you know, it really is sort of an old-fashioned ghetto in many ways, as I understand it. I'm not an expert. I haven't actually been there. But all I read about it is that this is a place where Brussels is really challenged because there are just so many different jurisdictions and police departments all in one city, and they're all under-resourced. So I think there are 19 jurisdictions and 6 separate police departments all within Brussels. And they also have had this challenge of, you know, coordination with intelligence. So perhaps they haven't moved fast enough to arrest people when they had suspicions because they were trying to develop legal cases. There's always that tension, you know, in law enforcement and terrorism.
Right. And we know in a civilized society, in a democracy, that we don't have warrantless invasions of people's homes and things of that nature. So how do you go about it in a neighborhood that seems to have a no snitch policy to find out where the bad guys are?
Well, I think one of the things you have to do is try to establish whatever presence you can at first. And that can, you know, it should include policing. Senator Cruz is not all wrong. But it also should include the things that go along with good community policing and good public policy presence. You know, everything from different kinds of youth activities to opportunities to join the fire department, other kinds of job creation activities that just give people a sense of opportunity, but also of being connected to the broader society and to the government. So you try to, you know, reduce the likelihood of any one individual developing a complete sense of alienation and hatred. Obviously, this is a bunch of, you know, highfalutin talk, and it's not always going to work. So you've also got to have your tougher means and your intelligence capabilities. But having that presence with community policing, with you know, fire, with education, with all sorts of integrated public agencies that talk to each other, talk to faith leaders, then you can begin to get tips when things start to go wrong. And you're not always going to get the tip if people don't trust you, but you know, this is why you've got to have a multifaceted presence so that sometimes it's people aren't really giving a tip necessarily directly to a police officer. They're giving a tip to a fire officer down the street who's employing some of these kids or whatever. And in other words, you just got to do a multidimensional way of plugging into the community. And it's never going to be easy, never going to work entirely. But Brussels really hadn't done much of it at all, from what I understand.
Yeah, and there's a lot of catch-up to do. A tie, at least geographically, comes from something that was said yesterday or said earlier this week when Donald Trump said, let's stop paying for NATO. We're done with NATO. Let's get beyond this. Is NATO still vital to our interests?
Yeah, I think that, you know, forgive the political science expression, but that's crazy talk from Mr. Trump, in my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of his ideas are worthy of being taken seriously, and they speak to a broader truth. Others just sort of reflect, I think, an ignorance of where our strengths are. And the fact that we cooperate with these 27 other modern industrial democracies that together have a GDP equal to ours, that together have a military force structure that's not as good as ours, but it's certainly our biggest partner in places like Afghanistan and in peace operations around the world and in dealing with Putin. This is an unbelievably good asset of the United States foreign policy. It's the main reason, I think, well, NATO and other alliances like that, Japan, Korea, Australia, this is the fundamentally main reason why we are so much better placed strategically than China or Russia. I mean, we obviously have a much more vibrant democratic society as well. But in terms of our position in the international system, we lead this coalition. It's about 60 countries that we're allied with in one way or another. And sure, that does put some burden on us. But in the case of Europe, wow, what a fantastic set of partners. And by the way, it doesn't mean that we have to take whatever citizens in Europe, you know, that we suspect of potentially doing wrong. You know, we can still apply our own intelligence and our own ways of controlling who comes into this country. So Trump's comments don't even really speak to the situation at hand, as far as I can tell.
Right. And the factless spouting doesn't help anybody. You mentioned South Korea. North Korea actually used the phrase preemptive nuclear strike. Look, I was born in 1961. I grew up watching Walter Cronkite on the news show, little cartoons of we have this many nukes and Russia has that many nukes. You and I aren't that far apart in age, Michael. There's no preemptive nuclear strike, is there?
Well, North Korea has never really been too reliant on speaking the truth in its foreign policy. It likes to make people fearful. And if it didn't do it quite so often, it might be more successful. The problem is that this kind of stuff just sounds like bluster when it's repeated endlessly. But I guess Kim Jong-un was trying to think of a way to outdo his father and grandfather. And the explicit nuclear threats were something that perhaps, you know, struck him as a way to get people's attention, because even his own predecessors in that job hadn't really usually used that kind of rhetoric. They didn't have as many bombs in their possession as he does now, for one thing. No, I don't think he's going to preempt, because he knows it would be the end of his country and the end of his own life. I mean, we're going to come after him with everything we've got if he does that. But he wants us to be nervous and to be reminded that he's got the bomb, too. And I don't think it could reach the United States with any kind of high confidence or precision, but it certainly could put South Korea at risk and maybe Japan. And I think that's the message he's trying to remind people about.
Yeah, and the phrase preemptive nuclear strike. I mean, come on. Question on Russia, and I'm pretty sure you brought this up before anybody. In a world that still lives in many ways by tribal rules, and I mean that I don't like my neighbor, and I haven't liked my neighbor for hundreds, if not thousands, of years, and I don't care how many times you come in and tell me I should, there's a reason we've chosen to live this life this way. And you brought up a long time ago a divided Syria. Maybe the only solution there. Is this part and parcel to why Russia pulled out?
Possibly. You know, obviously, there aren't too many people listening to your show or in our country who are fans of Putin, and I'm certainly not one of them either. But I would like to deconflict our relationship with Russia in the situation of Syria in particular, because we don't have interests that are so important that we have to somehow outduel Russia for influence in Syria. I mean, I think basically I just don't want that to be a war zone or a jihadist sanctuary.
Sure.
Or a threat to Israel, Jordan, and other friendly countries like Turkey in the area. So if we could stabilize this somehow working with Putin, I'd be perfectly content to do that. And I think his interests are primarily limited as well to securing his base along the Mediterranean, his traditional influence with the Syrian army. I don't think he cares that much about Syria being of the same political shape that it was before. And I would guess that a confederation of some kind could suit his interests as well. And then in his selfish perspective, then he leaves us to go destroy ISIS without his help, which is probably what he would prefer most of all. So, I think we could probably figure out a way to persuade Russia to go along with this. In fact, they seem open to it in recent statements. So I think the Turks and a couple others are the ones who need to be persuaded.
Michael O'Hanlon, I appreciate it. I know it's always busy for you to jump on, and thank you as always. Michael O'Hanlon.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me good.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9 at 8:13. Hi, buddy.
What's happening?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. A really interesting show yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, great coverage of
the
tragedy in Brussels yesterday.
By the way, because you're a talk show host as well, do you struggle with the word tragedy? Because I do. Here's why. I consider yesterday a travesty. Now, this is one of these nitpicky things. A travesty. A tragedy to me is an accident. A travesty to me is something that causes people harm, and it's a shame it happened. Do you see the difference, or am I just being nuts?
Please don't ask me a question like that.
It's a good point, because I know your answer.
I totally get your point. I had somebody on social media wondering, you know, why we were calling the people who did this suicide bombers, when really there are much more accurate ways to describe the kind of cowardice and insanity that takes place in somebody's mind. It, you know, like it gives them too much dignity to call them suicide bombers, even though that's exactly what it is. I get it. I totally understand the feeling. You just feel for, you know, somebody who is trying to get from point A to point B in an airport. You feel for a loved one who is at home, wondering what's going on, you know, in some other part of the world. It's a travesty. It's a tragedy. It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. There's no way to wrap your head around it. I mean, I gave up a while ago trying to figure out why people would think this is an appropriate course of action, because there's no way to wrap your head around it.
Yeah.
And this notion that this is some function of the religion of Islam is ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's this is...
These are crazy people.
This is a fraction of 1% of people who are Muslim who believe that this is the correct way to go. And I don't even want to open the lid on, you know, the question of...
These are crazy people.
This is a fraction of 1% of people who are Muslim who believe that this is the correct way to go. And I don't even want to open the lid on, you know, the question of Islamophobia and, you know, things like all the things that are being talked about, all the politicians who have politicized this tragic event. Whatever happened to the days where we just, you know, stood behind our government? When we act as a unifying force when a tragedy, travesty happens.
You know what? It seems like that ended. Remember after 9/11, I think it was 3 days after 9/11, 4 days after 9/11, the House had members, Republicans and Democrats, stand on the steps of Congress and sing, I believe it was America the Beautiful.
Right.
And you're thinking, well, there's unity. And then the flags flew, and gradually over the course of a few months, Democrats and Republicans started yelling at each other, and they haven't stopped since, and it's gotten worse.
Yeah, it was like less than an hour after this happened yesterday, and already it had become politicized. Can we grieve for a minute?
No, that's ridiculous.
I mean, you know, that's it's horrible. I mean, related to that yesterday, I know it seems trivial that, you know, stars, celebrity, A-listers, all tweeting their shock, their sympathy, their condolences yesterday, which I think is nice.
Yeah, they're entitled to their opinion,
oddly,
of course.
Yeah, oddly, some people are criticizing them. It's like, cares what Ellen DeGeneres thinks? Can somebody say my sympathy, my condolences?
Exactly.
Without somebody jumping down their throat?
Twitter, listen, I'm on Twitter all the time, and I like Twitter a lot, but Twitter, Facebook, comment sections on the web. This is the new home for cowards.
It's crazy. It's crazy land, USA. I mean, all those places are, you know, people are simply expressing condolences.
Yeah.
Lighten up a little bit.
And if you wouldn't say it to someone's face, then don't hit send.
Yeah, yeah.
Cowards.
Adele,
they're cowards.
Cowards,
Dean.
I tell you. Adele was doing a concert at the O2 Arena in London. It would be like Soldier Field. You know, it's like one of the biggest concert venues in London. She stops her show in the middle of the show, dedicates one of her songs to the people who died and the people who were affected by the attack yesterday. And you could hear a pin drop in that place while she sang the song. It was very moving. The videos all over the internet. They were supposed to have the Batman Superman premiere in red carpet in London last night. They did go ahead and show the movie, but they did not do the regular red carpet for security concerns. But they did say, we're not canceling our event. You know, life has to go on, and sure, we are not going to give in to the terrorists by changing the way that we live our lives. I know it's just, you know, showing a stupid movie, but, you know, that's...
I think you do have to go on. You do have to get on with your life. The more you ignore the cockroaches, the better off your life's going to be.
True. That's very true. I mean, security with everything. Justin Bieber is overseas right now doing a tour. And they upped security as they're doing it at all places and canceled all of the one-on-one meetings. You know, the like the meet-and-greet things most of the celebrities have afterwards. You pay extra. Why you would want to pay extra to, you know, to get Justin Bieber? It seems like I would pay extra if I was positive I wasn't going to meet him.
Yeah, I would pay a blocking fee. Right. Yeah, a Justin Bieber blocking fee.
But they canceled all of those things yesterday, like really unprecedented security. Mariah Carey is supposed to perform in Brussels over the weekend, and they're not sure if that concert's going to happen yet. I think they're making the decision. Number one, is it safe? Number two, you know, we want to go on with life and not cancel things, but I would think that...
well, within reason, right?
A major concert like that would be a very powerful statement that the terrorists did not stop life in Brussels.
Security people who protect us and do the best they possibly can, intelligence people. You want to say a prayer for somebody today? Say a prayer for them.
Yeah.
You know, those are the people getting it done. All right, so when will you give us the Batman Superman review?
I could tell you a little bit
about
it today. Oh,
when we come back right after.
I could tell you a little today.
Oh, there's a tease, kids. That's how you do a professional broadcast tease right there.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Dean on the Batman Attack Superman with a Flobe movie. Was that a spoiler? That could have been a spoiler. In just a second.
This is why they made me sign a form, because you can't be trusted with private information.
Well, I just haven't seen a Flobe in a movie in quite some time. I was very excited about it. But before we do that, do you want to play a quick round of Lollapalooza Band or a band I was in?
Oh, sure.
Okay, remember, this is America's favorite game show.
They released the official lineup today. Mm-hmm. You know, it's.
And I thought that would be a good time for us to play this game because America demands it.
You are very topical that way.
All right, so here's what you're playing for, Dean. You are playing from a pie from Baker Square.
Oh, my.
Your choice in pies.
Oh, I love a French silk.
BakerSquare.com. The Four Topless. The Four Topless. Is that a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
That was a band you were in.
Oh, you've won a pie.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, congratulations.
How did he ever know that?
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Can I give one to you?
Sure, go ahead.
Real band or not, Running Snot Nose.
Running Snot Nose? Running Snot Nose. I'm going to go with not a band.
Not a band.
Not a band.
Not a band.
Let me give one more to you.
Okay.
Are you ready to play?
Sure.
All right. Marshmallow. Marshmallow. Is that a band or a band I was in?
Steve,
a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
That is a band.
That is an actual band from Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
How do you know Marshmallow?
I read the full lineup this morning.
Why are you saying it like that?
Because it's spelled M-E-L-L-O.
Oh.
Marshmallow.
Oh, got it.
I read the full lineup this morning. This was me reading the full lineup when they released it this morning. Don't know them. Don't know them. Don't know them.
Hey, the SOB band's in.
Well, that's what
Nathaniel Ratliff.
That's often what they call us
on
the show.
They do. Nathaniel Ratliff. Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats. I would go to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's fact, one I'd go to.
Get a little bit of Nathaniel Ratliff to roll out of Dean when we're done.
The 4-day passes sold out yesterday. 1-day passes, $120 go on sale at 10 o'clock this morning.
And again, the four topless will not be playing because we weren't invited.
Oh. Maybe we'll be part of Steve's next big show that's coming up.
Seems right, doesn't it?
Frightened Rabbit will be there. That's exciting for Easter.
Saturday night we'll be at the Wilmette Theater. I don't know if there's any tickets left, but if there are, let me know because I got to buy some. Oh, wait, I'm in for free, aren't I? It's Andrea Darlis doing stand-up. Oh, I'm telling you. And you thought My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 was going to be a spectacle.
Does she remember she's doing it? I mean, she's been on vacation.
Yeah, who knows? She's knee-deep in Mai Tais.
Probably prepping.
Batman Superman, the movie opens when?
It opens officially Friday.
Friday. All right, so what can you tell us?
I can tell you that, you know, these trailers have been out forever. Batman Superman battling each other.
Yeah, why are they fighting? Well, why can't they get along?
That would be a spoiler that I do not want to share.
Did they try counseling?
But I do, I will say that probably about the first half of the movie is set up. So, you know, they're trying to explain what's up, what's going on with Batman, why is the world mad at our, you know, the great hero. You know, why are they looking at him as an alien who they want to ostracize? The whole world is that way. Batman's trying to, you know, kind of siding with the popular voice of who is this guy? You know, why is he against the Earthlings? Because really he's from someplace else.
Right.
But it takes so long to establish why this is going on, how this has happened, why Congress, one particular member in Congress, played by Holly Hunter, is particularly against the Man of Steel. It drags the first hour, I'm going to say like hour and a half of this movie, really is slow. You really have to be patient. There's so much setup. Do we really need to see, probably for the 100th time, you know, a young Bruce Wayne walking down a dark street and his parents are killed? And, you know, we've seen, how many times have we seen that in the Batman movies?
Right.
We understand he's troubled. We know why.
Sure.
Everybody knows all that. We don't need to see that legacy. I think they just needed to get to the point faster, because once they do, it actually gets pretty exciting then. Wonder Woman is introduced in the film. She is Israeli actress Gal Gadot, who is very, very pretty, very, very, very gorgeous, very, very nice. But
you interviewed her.
I interviewed her. I interviewed her, and also Jesse Eisenberg. You know who that is? Played Mark Zuckerberg in the movie Social Network.
So tell me about Gadot.
He plays, I'm going to get back to her in a second. He plays Lex Luthor in the movie.
Yeah, of course he does.
And when I talked with both of them, both Jesse Eisenberg and Steve's new fetish, Gal Gadot, about their roles. Gal Gadot really didn't even know that much about Wonder Woman when she got this role.
I wasn't a big comic fan when growing up. When the Linda Carter show was on, I wasn't even born. But after I got cast for this role...
You know how great that makes me feel?
Really? I'm sorry.
I feel like your grandfather. No,
no,
I'm just
you're
kidding.
Not.
I'm
no,
kidding.
I'm just being true.
No, I'm just
It is what it is.
Have fans been advising you along the way? I'm sure you've done a lot of these, you know, Comic-Cons and, you know, things like that.
I haven't gotten that much advice. I've gotten a lot of criticism.
Scornful eyes from people? Really?
Yes.
Criticism?
I don't look it up, but my sister does, and because she's a big fan of the superhero movies, and my sister's like, people are really pissed off that you're playing the part. Okay, I don't know what to do with that information. I haven't even done it yet.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, so I'm aware that people hate me for doing it, but I am hoping that I will win them over in the movie, because I really do think, like, I know what I'm doing.
He really does a really good job. I went in so skeptical about this sort of Woody Allen-like Lex Luthor.
Right. Woody Allen is Lex Luthor.
I would kill the Man of Steel with green kryptonite, but I have post-nasal drip right now. But he won me over in this. He won me over in this, and he's pivotal. Couple of huge spoilers in this movie. I hope nobody blows
Donald Trump's in it
and tells anybody about it. There is a Donald Trump element, you know, kind of a subplot. Not Donald Trump specifically, but this whole concept of you know, isolating people who are different is kind of Donald Trump-like. You know, so I there is a little bit of subtext, I think.
I just don't understand the fight, and I know you can't tell me, and I'll go to the movie, but, you know, I don't want to see like Rocky 8, Rocky versus Bullwinkle. You know, I just said, yeah. I don't get it.
It's not like that.
Couples counseling for Superman and Batman.
It's worthwhile. They just took too long setting up. When you go to this movie, just be patient. It's 2.5 hours long. It's a long movie that didn't need to be as long as it did.
House of Cards, Frank versus Claire. That's happening, actually, yeah, isn't it?
Once it gets going, it's worth it. The plot twist that I didn't understand is when Superman married this Greek woman and really wasn't accepted very much in her Greek family. I know we're trying to tie into popular things, but that part I didn't get.
He could lift the biggest baklava ever.
That's right.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right.
That's Dean Richards. Oh, how about a little Tootsie? Give me a little something here.
I'm on a call to myself with the ashes of you. And nobody is going to give a damn.
Not a band I was in.
Son of a bitch, give me a drink. One other night, I just can't be me.
Hire them for your birthday party. And when Grandpa gets new teeth. Nathaniel Ratcliffe and the Night Sweats. Come on, clap now. Sweet song about the destruction of a man. And you can't help but sing along. All right, 8:32. Quick break, back with the big story next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
8:43 now. The AGC Transatlantic Institute in Brussels spends its day strengthening bonds and fostering dialogue between the U.S. and the EU on stuff that we all ought to be concerned about, human rights around the world, combating anti-Semitism, and stopping the spread of terrorism. The Transatlantic Institute director is Daniel Schwamenthal, who joins me now. Good morning, Daniel. Are you in Brussels?
I am in Brussels. Good morning.
Good morning to you. What is the feel on the streets? Have people tried to get back to their lives, or is it too early for that?
No, as a matter of fact, it's quite amazing. Things have sort of returned back to normal, but, you know, this is the new normal, and that means military is present around the streets and even sort of armored personnel vehicles in the middle of Brussels. But public transportation, which was all put on hold yesterday, is now slowly back in full force, and people have mostly returned to their work.
You know, your organization does an amazing job of fighting against the stereotypes and the generalizations that we all do and use online, and the media does it too easily as well. When you go to a suburb like, is it Molenbeek? Is that the suburb?
It's actually not a suburb. It's really a neighborhood in Brussels.
Okay, that particular area has been painted internationally as just a hornet's nest of terrorists. Is that a generalization as well? It's got to be.
It's difficult to say if it's exaggerated or not. It's all relative, but no doubt, we have a serious problem, not just in Molenbeek, but particularly there, but throughout Western Europe, of parallel societies within Muslim communities, not well integrated at all, high unemployment rates, but also a high degree in terms of radicalization and so forth. If you look at some of the surveys that have been taken around Europe, and then you ask average Muslims about things related to Sharia and so forth, and support for jihadism, the numbers are always quite astonishingly high. So we have a serious problem, and maybe some people may not like the word hornet's nest, but nevertheless, we have to face the reality that we have a serious problem.
The serious problem is being dealt with in different ways at different times by different people, and too often we wait until the horrible thing that happened yesterday happens. How far behind the eight ball are you folks in Brussels in catching up to this?
The Belgian government, the Belgian authorities are still far behind, I'm afraid. It's not so much a fault of the current government, which has come to power a little more than a year and a half or so, and has really tried to turn things around.
But things have gone, have been allowed to deteriorate over a very long period of time in previous governments. So the security services are completely overstretched and are completely overwhelmed with the number of potential terrorists and radicalized people. And as you know, Belgium has the highest number of foreign fighters per capita in Europe. So these are Belgian Muslims who have come have gone to Syria and Iraq to fight for ISIS. And many of them have returned and are posed now, of course, a considerable security threat, as we now see. And the authorities simply don't have the personnel to really deal with this problem adequately.
Talking to the AJC Transatlantic Institute Director Daniel Schwamenthal, who's in Brussels. One of the frustrations that people have here is that the Islamic leaders around the country here, and there are exceptions to this. I know there's one of the main mosque leadership teams in Los Angeles has been very outspoken about this. But there's not enough uproar and outrage from Islamic leaders about the way their religion is being painted and about what these insane terrorists are doing. What's the flavor of that? Not just in Belgium, but around Europe. Are you hearing from folks who want to protect their religion and say this isn't us?
This is a constant refrain, of course, and they are right to say that this is, this doesn't represent the true Islam.
As the Bears continue their roster overhaul,
hold that thought. Hold that thought. We good? Okay. I'm sorry. Would you repeat the point for me?
Well, I mean, you hear this, of course, a very defensive and perhaps human reaction to say, well, this has nothing to do really with that. It is indeed, though, I think it would be much more helpful if many of these community leaders would be fighting this much more seriously and face the reality that they they encounter in their own communities in a more honest way. And there are outspoken critics and Muslim leaders and preachers who stand up, and they are often then have to be put under police protection because they get immediately, death threats and so forth from the radicals. One important issue, though, where we can help the Muslim community is that we have to finally put an end to allowing money coming from places like Saudi Arabia and other Gulf countries. It is used here to build radical mosques and to train radical preachers, send them back here, and to spread this poisonous ideology. And it is quite, for me, hard to understand why 15 years after September 11, Europe, but also the United States, still allow this to happen. And as long as we allow this to happen, our attempt to counter this radicalization, we will always be several steps behind. We have to cut off the funding and the radicalization in the first place.
Yeah, there's the politeness. Look, Donald Trump is a frightening character to me and to a lot of people here. But some of the political correctness he addresses certainly needs to be dealt with here and around the world as well. Political correctness and appropriate communication between governments is always fine. But at some point, you do have to say, we're not allowing this. We're not allowing this to happen. We're not allowing your money to go here. We're just not. It's the cliche, right? Cut the head of the snake off.
Absolutely. I don't want to, the point really here is that we have to establish our own sovereignty. And this is a national security issue,
right.
And we need to clearly identify that things like education, and particularly religious education, in this day and age where we have radical Islam and terrorism on a scale that is simply unprecedented, that these are national security issues, and therefore we have to take very determined action. To give you an example, you know, we live in a democracy. We live in we want to live in a capitalist societies where we believe in free flow of capital and so forth. But if a Kremlin-linked company were to try to buy an American defense company, obviously, government would interfere and say, "No, this could damage our national security. We will not allow this." And in the same vein, we have to say that if the Saudi funding is directed here to build a mosque in Europe, then we have to step in and say, "No, sorry. This is damaging our national security, because no doubt, given what we know, what sort of type of Islam is being preached as state religion in Saudi Arabia, this mosque is being built is no doubt going to preach similar radical ideology, and we cannot allow this to happen here, because the poisoning of young impressionable Muslim minds in Europe has become obviously a national security issue."
And that, combined with opportunity and employment for that sector of the population, is key as well. That's great information. Stay safe, sir. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
It's, Daniel Schwamenthal, the AJC Transatlantic Institute Director, who, again, is in Brussels. Ernie Johnson will join us to talk a little tournament after 9 o'clock. And because you demanded it, we will replay a chunk of yesterday's Coach Q call with Eleanor from the Senior Center in Park Ridge. We'll play that back next hour as well. And we'll get to the news here in just a second. And next hour, Ernie Johnson on the tournament. Have you checked the standings? Oh, we talked about it Monday.
Yeah.
They haven't changed.
I don't think they've changed since Sunday.
No games have been played.
No. If you've lost ground since then, you're really in trouble.
It's not a good bracket.
No.
You know, last year we talked about doing a Celebrity 16. We'd pick 16 celebrities who would do the re-bracketized Final 16. I don't feel like making 16 calls today, but I may find a few people to do that. Like Chuck Todd is supposed to be on tomorrow. Chuck's a big sports guy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get Chuck on tomorrow to pick the Final 16. And basically, it's a great way, if your bracket's blown up, to get a fresh start.
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, we could start our own just for the show, pick from here on out.
Start over?
You just start with 16.
We go with a do-over bracket?
Yeah. Oh, I'm game for that. Yeah.
I think everybody's game for
that. Let's not tell Andrea. I think she's the only surviving top winner, right? She picked
maybe
Oregon.
Maybe if she hadn't left town.
And we all picked Michigan State, I believe.
No, I have Kansas.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I think I'm still alive.
I think Ross Cochran.
Well, we're not talking, yeah.
But he doesn't really count.
No, he doesn't.
No, we don't talk about people that abandoned us.
Mm-hmm. Kevin.
That's a long list, Steve.
That's a good point. Somebody brought this up yesterday. They said, okay, Ross left the show. Orion left the show, kind of.
Kevin's never here.
Kevin's, on with Roe. Anna, she left the show.
Yeah.
Andrea's out playing golf.
The person looks at me and goes, looks like you're the constant in all of this.
Do you shower every morning?
Yeah, actually, I shower quite regularly, and I also feel like I'm not that difficult to be around, but maybe it's time to take a look at me. Maybe I'm the problem.
No, Mara and I are still here.
We've
We're
stuck
okay
around.
With you.
I think that probably hurts my cause.
Of course, we stuck around for how many other morning guys,
I came
too.
Along.
Thank you for joining us on the CBS Postgame Show. I'm Ernie Johnson, here with Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley. Well, the teams are set. What an exciting performance by these student-athletes, guys.
Incredible. Yeah, it really was. I don't even like college basketball. They just paid me to sit here for 2 weeks in March and keep talking until somebody hands me a sandwich.
Chuck, Kenny, and a guy who can make a bow tie look good, the great Ernie Johnson. I had a little story. I got to ask Ernie about this. Dave, you told me a little story yesterday. You and Ernie hung out at the Olympics in Norway?
In Norway, dude. That's over 20 years ago.
Were you like the Lillehammer twosome? Or?
We weren't in Lillehammer. We were in Hamar.
Hamar?
That's where they had the skating venue, the speed skating.
Did you go out and have a cocktail with Ernie?
I think that's a possibility. I was much younger then, Steve.
Did you cover the figure skating, too?
No, I was speed skating.
Well, Ernie's a versatile talent.
Would have been interesting.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Calling about a triple cell call.
And there's few guys, especially white guys, who could pull off the bow tie. Did I mention that already? I think I did. The great Ernie Johnson joins us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm outstanding, and I remember those days in Hamar at the Viking ship, where we called speed skating, where Dan Jansen won his gold medal.
That's right. Bonnie Blair won a bunch of them. Yeah,
that was a wonderful trip. It really was.
What kind of a drinker was Dave Ennett in those days?
No, Ernie, that's not necessary.
He was our driver.
Thank you, Ernie.
And Chuck was in the car going, I don't understand speed skating.
That was long before Chuckster. Yes. That would have set speed skating back to the turn of the century.
Well, we love Chuck, and you have this amazing ability to manage those guys and keep that thing between the white lines by letting it get just as funny and crazy and as it needs to be, and still getting information out. Man, you're like a magician.
No, you're too kind. We've had such fun on that show for 16 years on the NBA, and now with the March Madness thing too. You know what? It's just one of those things where you can tell, sitting in my chair when something is funny and we're having a good time with it, and it's nice to have a producer who doesn't scream at you in your ear and say, move on, you got to get moving, because we kind of just let her rip. We're kind of like guys in the living room watching a game, and I'm just trying, and sometimes it's not that easy to try to get us from there to somewhere else, but I think fans just kind of can relate to that, and it's like guys sitting around and nobody asking for permission to talk, and we try to get everything covered that we can, but man, it sure beats the heck out of working for a living.
I still think the highlight of the selection show was you trying to get Charles to work the touch screen. That was classic.
It was you know what, and before the show we kind of like practiced a little bit. So the team that you want, just hit them and they'll magically move over. But when it came time to be on the air, it was like he just wanted to hit where he thought they would be, and nothing would happen.
That's the thing about that. That was one of those moments, because I was thinking about Journey. I was thinking, like, here's what I pictured. I pictured a producer comes up and you're going, no, don't show him. No, we'll do it on the air.
No, we did say, hey, show him how it works. This is fine. Don't show him. We went through it. Here, hit the team that you like, and it will move. But it was fun. That was part of that 2-hour extravaganza.
Have you ever in your life, and I'm talking about in all of sports, seen anything?
Time to cover.
Seen anything like what happened in Northern Iowa?
No, nobody has.
Unbelievable.
No, that's the biggest comeback in Division I history. It's there are a lot of statistical sources out there, so when you get that note in an email, it says it's never happened before. It's the biggest comeback ever in Division I. No, and you know what that does to me? It reminds you that these are, for the most part, teenagers playing a game under this huge spotlight, and anything can happen. But even that, when you talk about 45 seconds and a 12-point lead, and you know what I was doing? I was sitting at the desk because I knew we had a post-game show to do after that game, and I was looking at it because they showed these fans going crazy, the UNI fans and all, their purple. And I said, okay, so these guys have come from Cedar Falls. It's about a 600-mile trip to Oklahoma City, and I was actually looking on my phone, distance from Anaheim to Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now it's another 1700 miles that these fans are going to go to follow these guys, and then suddenly, they're going back to Cedar Falls. There is no trip to Anaheim in the cards for them. It was one of those comebacks where you were so sure that they had the game that there was no question. And again, it just points out, kids playing a game and under immense pressure, and wow, it was incredible.
Yeah, Coach Kay said something after Duke won, and they had that crazy second game against Yale where it was all Duke in the first half and Yale gave him a run. And he said, look, they're 18-year-olds, a lot of these kids, and sometimes they get lost at the circus.
At the amusement park,
right,
was, and that was such a great quote. And it is what happens. And it's part of what makes it it's part of the charm of the tournament to me, guys, is that you have these, often imperfect players play in this game, and these things are going to happen. They're going to make kids mistakes, and that's what builds toward this whole drama. This month, here's what the difference between this and the NBA to me a lot of times is just watching a post game show. is watching a post-game interview, is the reality of this is it, of a coach in tears, of players in tears or speechless because this is the end of the road, because I'm not going to hang around these guys anymore, because I'm not going to coach this kid anymore. And they're doing more than coaching. They're trying to grow up men, you know, in this process. And then there's the reality. I'm not going to coach this kid anymore. That's what this this tournament has over the NBA in spades. It's just like you can't get that emotion almost anywhere in sports.
Yeah, great point. Great point. The bigger surprise to you, Ernie, if as you look at the Sweet 16, is it Wisconsin or Syracuse being in there?
Well, I think probably Syracuse, simply because people had them out, you know, the first four out, or had them on the shakiest of ground on the bubble of getting in, and now they're in the Sweet 16 and have a chance against Gonzaga to get to the Elite Eight. And so I think that's probably more surprising, although Wisconsin wasn't on the firmest ground either going into the tournament, and they haven't played that great. In fact, they're, you know, I was looking at the numbers, and you can look at all kind of numbers and stuff, but offensive rating wise, they're like number 58, and so they're in the Sweet 16 in terms of offensive efficiency. They're last in the Sweet 16, going up against a Notre Dame team that's actually last in the Sweet 16 in defensive rating. So, you know, what's going to happen there? Sometimes it's one shot. Sometimes it's Bronson Koenig at the horn. To put you there. And again, the beauty of the tournament.
Right.
What's the best story left in the tournament?
Is Thomas Walkup going to shave the beard? I think just in terms of the big picture of the tournament, when you looked at the season and how the number one team was knocked off seven times, you know, is now you still have four number ones intact. Who's the most vulnerable? And I picked UVA when this thing started, so I'm gonna stick with that. But I think it's compelling that Syracuse or Gonzaga, a double digit seed, is going to be in the Elite Eight. You know, whoever wins that game,
sure.
And I think they may very well come down to these, amidst all the uncertainty, these number one seeds may all find themselves in Houston. I mean,
I guess that's vindication for the guys who put the grid together initially, to some extent, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. But you know, if you put that grid together, you got to be sitting here right now saying, you know what, we put together some pretty good matchups, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so
right.
So the tournament's been wild so far, and only should get more so. Is it really going to snow in Chicago?
I think Thursday we may get some flurries.
Yeah,
you know, we
yeah.
got a little spoiled because we got a little taste of Atlanta weather for a few days. And
yeah,
the good news is,
when we were there the other day as I was coming home.
Is that right?
New York. Yeah, crazy. But I'm looking at your games in Chicago, and it's what you got? Oregon and Duke. No, that's an Anaheim.
Got Virginia,
game.
Iowa yeah. State, and Syracuse Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Boy, Boeheim's
Iowa State's going to be crazy.
It's going to be great. Boeheim's walking up and down outside on Michigan Avenue here, already looking grumpy. He's already got his game face on.
No, you know what? You talk about that zone defense. I know we're around with Charles a lot, and Charles is always, I don't know why they keep staying in that zone. Well, I mean, teams are shooting like 30% against that zone.
But
I'm
glad you mentioned that, though. What's so special, because you guys both have seen a million games, what's so special about that 2-3? Why is it working so well?
I just think it's always, you know, when it's your trademark thing and you've been running it that long and you have the pieces that fit into that and the length that
right.
makes things difficult on folks. And Kenny made a good point the other day. He says a lot of times you come out and play these guys, and all of a sudden it's, wow, they look they're a lot longer and bigger in person than they are on tape, and making the passes that you want to make and running your offense the way you want to. So I think that's why it's worked. I think it's going to be key for a guy like Kyle Wilcher from Gonzaga to be able to bust that zone from deep. He's a good 3-point shooter, and try to extend it a little bit more and maybe make something possible inside. But, yeah, Syracuse is proving, not only shouldn't there have been a question mark, we're a pretty good team.
What would Shaq say about that zone?
It doesn't matter what you play against me, because I'm the most dominant player.
of all time. So you just feed the beast and you get it down low. To me, it is barbecue chicken.
Oh, that's great. Oh,
when you sit next to a guy for 4 or 5 years, you can almost pick up a little bit right there.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Hey, when they brought that idea, and I'm jumping back and forth the NBA here, when they brought that idea of Shaq joining the team, you got Shaq on one end and Chuck on the other. Did you know it'd work right away, or were you going, I don't know if I want to be between these two trees?
You know, you never know what's going to work. You didn't know if it was going to work with me and Kenny and Chuck. You know, it's just one of those things where you say, you know what, Charles is available. If we can get him, it'd be a great thing to see if it'll work. I mean, my biggest concern when we got Chuck was when the novelty wore off, is he going to get tired of this and say, I want to do something else? And it's been a 16-year run at this point now. I don't think you can ever predict it, guys. And you just kind of, I knew Shaq had watched the show a lot. I knew this is where Shaq wanted to be. He wanted to be part of the fun on here. And you know, when it began, it was like every night he wanted to do something crazy. You know, and Chuck and Kenny and I joked with him at one point. Said, look, you don't have to raise the bar every show. You know, you're going to want to set yourself on fire next show. He said, I'll do it. Really. You know, he's said before, he says, it would be funny on the show is if you tase me. Really, it'd be funny. You could do it. You know, you'd get like 2 billion YouTube hits. And I said, I know. That's his goal in life. Everything he wants to do, he wants it to get 2 billion YouTube hits.
Can you imagine the size of the taser you'd need? Good God, man.
Oh, I know. Believe me. It'd be like one of those death rays in an old science fiction movie that you'd have to use. But he's been tremendous. He knows how the show works, and I think he's evolved in the last few years from, hey, we need to do something funny to, you know, paying attention more to the game and saying, hey, look, I know I need to analyze the game a little bit and not just have you push me into a Christmas tree or push a Christmas tree over on me. So, he's fit right in, and we all have a wonderful time together.
Ernie, I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about calling the Cubs in the postseason last fall. How much fun was that for you?
It was an absolute thrill, fellas. It really was. And it was a great year to have the NL. We had great matchups, and I had done the Cubs a couple times in the regular season, and have known Joe for a while, and have, you know, but to be able to witness what he did with that team, he's a perfect guy, to put in that mix. And it was, believe me, there were pinch yourself moments when you're sitting in Wrigley Field calling a playoff game and that place being just up for grabs. So that goes in the time capsule for me for sure.
You know, everybody was inspired by your own health journey. And I was thinking about you this week with Sager's story. And then last night I'm watching Real Sports and they did a profile. Is there anything other than prayers we can do for Craig Sager? I mean, if anybody's going to pull off a miracle, it seems like he may.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the piece. It's just, guys, it's just hard, man.
Sure.
You know, it's I'm kind of numb because I talked to Stacy, his wife, the other day, and we got into a few things. But and I'll be honest with you, when I looked online, I didn't know about this 3 to 6 month thing that's being reported.
Kind of came out of nowhere.
I didn't see that, and. But at the same time, it's like, well, 3 to 6, but there have been people who've gone 5 years. I mean, we've seen it. You know, you've seen people who have lived far outside of what the doctors say they can do.
Right.
He's already gone through stuff that other people have never gone through treatment-wise. And he is an absolute warrior and a guy who... And I would tell people in the first year and a half that he's going through this, like I was doing a game in Houston last year, a baseball game in Houston, he's at MD Anderson, and he comes by the ballpark, and he's looking kind of beat up, and he's still Segs. He's still this positive force, and this guy who you spend 5 minutes with him, and you just leave fired up, and it's the same way now. And so, I got nothing better than prayer.
Right.
I haven't found anything in all my years on the planet, and so if you're that type, please toss him up for Segs and his wife and his family and you know, you never know. I would never bet against this guy, that's for sure.
A friend of mine was dealing with stage 4 colon cancer, and stage 4 colon cancer, you don't come back from that, and went through all of the procedures and everything else, and you know, people closest to him were trying to get used to the idea of not having him around anymore. Well, he's 2 years on the other side of trouble.
Yeah.
So miracles happen.
You don't know, and it's and every one of that's one thing I learned from my episode with is there are so many kinds of different kinds of cancer and different kinds of treatment and different way people respond to it, and so I remember telling Segs the same thing that was told to me when I was going through treatments and stuff. Look, you may have cancer, it doesn't have you. And and if you have that kind of a mentality where it's, look, I'm not going to let you dominate and I'm not going to let you be who I am, then you just try to carry that through. He has done that from day one. And so we'll, again, we'll, we just keep pulling for him, keep praying for him, and it's all you can say right
well,
now.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And as I just said, that's the best we have to offer, so let's at least offer that. So God bless him.
Yes, indeed.
Safe trip, and where are you going to be on Thursday?
I'll be back here in the Atlanta studio with Wally Szczerbiak and Seth Davis and Buzz Williams, who will join us for a couple of days. And then Chuck and those guys will be in the New York studio with Greg, and then I'll be down in the Atlanta studio as we flip-flop shows, and then I'll go to Houston next week.
Of course, Dave, you know Buzz Williams, second man to step on the moon. Oh, you
probably
didn't know
that. He's the
coach. That's Buzz Aldrin?
Coach of Virginia Tech, I'm Steve.
Sorry. You know, but not that Buzz couldn't. You know, I couldn't have passed Buzz Williams either.
You're the best, man. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, Ernie.
Steve, Dave, thanks so much for having me on, guys. Have a great day.
There you go.
Too.
It's Ernie Johnson. Not likable at all. Did you notice that about him?
He's a great guy.
He's the best.
He really is. It's good to catch up with
At Turner Sports EJ. 941, because you demanded it, on Twitter at Cochran Show, Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. Why don't you like me? Why aren't you following me? Oh, you are. Okay, thanks. But a big response to our friend Eleanor and the reunion of Eleanor and Coach Q yesterday on the program. Coach Q doing his regular visit. Eleanor is from the, help me out, Dave, Centennial Activity Center?
I believe Centennial Activity Center in Park
Ridge.
Well,
you live there.
I don't live there, but I believe that was what we were told.
This is the deal. This is the one goal Blackhawks situation where there was a request to see, hey, we'd love to see a game, and the Blackhawks brought the game to them. Coach Q was the referee for floor hockey involving the residents or participants there. Pat Foley did the call. Jim Cornelison did the anthem, and Eleanor is one of the stars in the video. You can see the video on the Blackhawks website, chicagoblackhawks.com. We link it a number of different ways through the WGNradio.com website and in other places. But yesterday when I was talking to Coach Q, I said this idea of going to the Senior Activity Center, where did the idea come from, Coach?
All as I can say, they says we're going to go, we're going to bring the game to them, and honest to God, that was the most fun that maybe I've ever had in my life that day. We had an absolute riot. And it was, I shouldn't say that word lately. But anyways, we had a lot of fun. And everybody just enjoyed it to a whole new level. And it was a, oh my God, did it ever come together? I think everybody, I can't wait to say hi to Eleanor. She had more fun than anybody, too.
And here we go. Eleanor, say hi to your new best friend, Coach Q.
Oh, my God. Love you, love you, love you.
Hey, Eleanor, we have
so,
any fun?
So thrilled.
Eleanor, Coach asked if you had any fun that day.
The most fun, the thrill of a lifetime, totally awesome, and unexpected.
Here's
it was
the,
such a surprise.
Here's the thing. If people haven't seen the video, Dave, and you and I have seen it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can go to the Blackhawks website now and you can see it. If you Google Eleanor, it'll probably come up. They brought the game in very early. They didn't tell the folks at the senior center there what was happening. Coach was there. Pat Foley was there to do the call.
Jim Cornelison.
Cornelison was there to do the anthem. And Coach.
Frank Pellico at the organ.
And Frank at the organ. And, Coach, what did you think of Eleanor's game? Did she have any game? She have any
moves? Oh, yeah, she had game. Very competitive. Yeah, very competitive. They all were so competitive. Everybody was sweating. It was unbelievable. It was like it was for keeps. Eleanor, now, do you guys talk about that game a lot when you guys go back, when you go back to the center?
Oh, my God. It is the talk of the day. Every single day, we can't get over it. And that coach, and that coach. Everybody loves the coach. because he could not have been any nicer. He was so kind to take pictures with everybody. This one, sure. This one, sure. We've treasured all those shots.
Well, it's a very special team, and we know how good that is. But I think it's so cool they came out and spent all that extra time with you guys. But Eleanor, he says you have game. Did you score any goals?
I did.
He scored big goals, and hey, that was unbelievable. The some of the playmaking, and the whacking, and oh my! They take the puck away from they were or the ball. They were sour. It was good.
Q, you were the showed. You were the referee, weren't you?
Yeah, and Kitch and Kevin each had a team, so it was a and then they tied it up right at the very end, and then the best line of the whole thing was, and I'm going to use it right now. One of the ladies said to. I said right at the end when it was 9-9 and it was last minute, I goes, next goal wins, sudden death. And one of the ladies says to Kitch, she goes, he can't say that to this group.
That's tremendous. Was there any trash talking, Coach, on this squad?
I don't know, Eleanor. Eleanor might has a better can answer that better.
Yeah, Eleanor. Did anybody team? Did anybody trash talk about how much?
No, we hugged each other on the opposite team. That's nice. How much we enjoyed this whole episode.
And Eleanor, I assume you've seen the video.
I have, and I've been getting calls from people saying. How lucky were you? How lucky? Right. And that's how we feel.
I'm surprised you're not getting calls from guys at other centers trying to pick you up and take you dancing.
No, because I'm a little too active for them.
Eleanor, you're the best, Coach. I know how much fun you had there, and it looked like a great thing. But, man, what a salute to the Blackhawks again in that one-goal campaign. It really is. Really is cool.
This was a thrill. Yeah, it was fun.
So there you go. All the guy's done is won Stanley Cups, Eleanor, and you guys gave him more fun than he's ever had.
Oh my God, we had the best time, and they are a class act.
Well, there you go, Coach. I hope that makes your day like it does mine.
Well, we did have fun, Eleanor. Great talking and hearing
thank
them
you,
how much fun
you,
we had again.
Thank you.
All right, hold the line if you would. And Coach, I wanted to get you Eleanor's number, but she said she wouldn't give it to just anybody. There you go. Coach Q and Eleanor. Beat that. It's tremendous. The full interview, too, if you want to hear it again or pass it along to your friends, wherever WGN podcasts are, including iTunes by subscription. Tune in anytime. What am I thinking? iHeart. Or just get a hold of Kevin or Mike. I'll give out their cell phones before the end of the show, and they'll come and recreate it at your house, Kevin playing the role of Eleanor. It's 9:47. We're back after this on 720 WGN. All right, 9:52 now. You guys up for maybe an extra round of... America's Hottest Game Show.
Yeah. Let's go.
Full Lollapalooza lineup was announced today. I'll name the band. You tell me if it's a Lollapalooza band or if it's a band I was in. If you want to play, get on the phone at 312-981-7200. If you're not sure, Dave and Mary will be your lifelines. 312-981-7200. Give me three callers. Three callers should do it. Three callers. Oh, no, I can't find my prize list. Dave, stall for a second while I look.
It's 9:53 on Wednesday morning here on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy coming up in just a few minutes.
Ernie Johnson was terrific, wasn't he?
Ernie was great.
He was awesome. So is Eleanor.
Eleanor is terrific.
Right. Love Eleanor.
Yeah, we love Eleanor.
981-7200, the number.
Did you fall off one of our new chairs there, Steve?
No, I like the new chair. I can't find... Can I get another prize list? I'm still looking for the prize list.
Maybe you should
list.
Have asked for that already.
Yeah.
None of this is on the air, is it?
I think we've got our callers.
Oh,
let's go
good.
To the phone now where Tom is standing.
It's a lot of Lala listeners.
Tom, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing?
All right. What are you up to today?
I am painting a hallway ceiling.
How come? Nobody else will do it for you?
Yeah, I couldn't find nobody.
Hmm. Always got to be you. When
yeah,
do you
you're right
how about a little
that.
Tom time? When does Tom get time for Tom?
Well, I'm trying to figure that one out myself.
Amen, brother. All right, so the question is this a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in? The band is Where's My Monkey? Where's My Monkey?
Band you were in.
That's a band I was in? Oh, you're a big winner. Congratulations.
All right.
Would you like to risk those prizes and go for more?
Hell yeah.
Could be the paint fumes. The band is Just the Pips. Just the Pips. Is that a Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
Lollapalooza.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
We were going to give you $245 million in cash after you won the first time.
Remember, that was what Steve loved to do, be a pip.
That was unbelievable.
That's his favorite thing.
But I got a great consolation prize for you. You got an app gift card. Pleasing people since 1936. You go to Glenview or go online at apt.com. You go in, you ask for Steve Shapiro. He'll take great care of you.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
All right, buddy. Hold on. Good luck with the painting. Let's go to Noel. Is it Noel or Noel?
Noel.
Noel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
All right. What are you doing?
Oh, working. Trying to work.
What's the job?
I work for a trucking company.
You know, I'm a soft touch for Noelle. I think she wins anyway. She doesn't even have to play.
I can tell.
Yay! Yeah.
Well, let's just go through the motions and pretend this is legitimate.
Sure.
All right. The band is Muddy Magnolias. Muddy Magnolias. Is that a band I was in or a Lollapalooza band?
Good question. Let's go Lollapalooza band.
Oh! Wow. Woo. Congratulations. Not just attractive, bright, too. Uh-oh. Horse Thief. Horse Thief. Is that a band I was in or a Lollapalooza band?
Oh, my. I think I might need help on this one.
You want to go to Mary or Dave?
Let's go Mary.
Mary, Horse Thief.
Oh, no.
Lollapalooza band or a band I was in?
Sounds like a weird band you were in. Oh,
since Mary blew
well,
it, you win the prizes anyway.
It's a Lollapalooza band.
Oh. That's unbelievable.
What do they sing, Dave?
You get a Chevy Drive, Chicago.com, WGN Radio, stainless steel, travel mug, and a bag of Papa Nicola's coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. You get an Apt gift card from our friends at Apt. Again, ask for Steve Shapiro or go to apt.com. And am I out of Harry Connick tickets? I got another pair. Am I out? I'm out? I don't have any more?
Oh, disappointing. I love him.
But this is Noel. This is my new friend, Noel.
Oh, I love him.
Hold on. Let me get Mike involved here. Mike, are you going to be the creep that really breaks Noel's heart here?
Maybe there's something we could do. Now you're making me feel bad.
Steal him from Ro's show. There's an idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I give Ro prizes all the time. Take Ro's stuff.
Done and done.
All right. So hold on, Noel. Hold on. You can negotiate with Mike. All right? And let's go one more. Let's go Dan here, who's on hold. All right, Dan. Lollapalooza band or a band I was in? The band is Uncle Murray. Uncle Murray.
Lollapalooza.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but you win a Chevy Drive Chicago.com, WGN Radio, stainless steel travel mug. Chevy Drive Chicago.com as well. We'll play more next time. Bill and Wendy next.